Hi, I'm Jeff Aiken, one of the hosts of Babylon 5, for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. This is the podcast where myself and my co-host Brent Allen watch Babylon 5 for the first time. We search for Star Trek-like messages in this series, and we're going to decide if we should have watched this sooner. Now, this is our pilot episode, and we're going to start releasing regular episodes on May 30th. So hit that subscribe button today and don't miss anything. Now, thank you for joining us and enjoy our review of The Gathering for the first time.
It's my first time.
Welcome, everybody. We're so excited to have you here. I'm Jeff Aiken, host of the Starfleet Leadership Academy, and I am watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
And I am Brent Allen, host of Beam Me Up, a Star Trek podcast, and I am also watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
Neither of us have seen this epic show before, and we're going to watch it together and bring you along for the ride. So we've just watched the pilot episode, The Gathering. Brent, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, The Gathering first aired February 22nd, 1993. So a long time ago. I always say these shows are products of their time, and this show absolutely is a product of their time, and I'm sure we'll get into some of that a little bit later. It's written by J. Michael Straczynski. I think I'm saying his last name right. He is sometimes known as the Great Maker by the fans because he is the creator of Babylon 5. He's the master architect of the entire thing. But for the sake of this show, we'll just call him JMS because I'm sure we're going to reference him a lot over the course of this podcast. And the show was directed by Richard Compton. Now this episode, and I hesitate to call it an episode, Jeff, because it was the first of what will become six Babylon 5 movies. And although this one was definitely the series pilot, it takes place a year before the events of Babylon 5 actually begin. And therefore, it's not actually considered season one, episode one, which is very weird to me, but okay. And depending on how you're watching this particular episode slash movie, you could be seeing one of two different versions of this film. Of course, there's the original cut, which aired back in 1993. However, several years later, in 1998, I believe it was, the series moved stations to TNT, and TNT wanted to, I guess, introduce these characters to their viewing audience, and so they commissioned a special edition cut to do just that. And in doing so, they actually changed several things. Now, they seem mostly minor, but most of the things that they changed were things that it seems like the series would later retcon or establish as different than the way the original pilot had said. So they went and changed things in the pilot to match what would happen later in the show. For example, in the special edition, when the telepath goes into Kosh's mind and we see him looking at his own hand when he gets that little poison skin tag thing on, the coloring there was changed from the special edition to the from the original cut to the special edition to match the way that we later see Kosh looking at himself at another point in the series. I guess I haven't seen those episodes to know, but there's that one. And then there's another one where Sinclair tells Garibaldi to set his weapon to Force 5, which as a Star Trek guy, you're like, set your phaser to kill, I think, right, is what that meant, which would imply that it's an energy based weapon, but they later, and the series established that it's in fact a projectile weapon, so they actually just cut that part out. So those are the little kind of things that they changed. They added in a few scenes that were cut from the original one. Even though this pilot would get picked up, and it was released in February of 1993, the series still would not premiere for another 11 months in January of 1994. And that's this episode. Let's get into this episode, Jeff. What do you say?
That'd be great. And I think, too, like, for me, I was a senior in high school when this came out, right? And so, like, this is right in my wheelhouse of viewing. It's wild to me. I've never watched it before. But I think I have a level of maturity watching this that I didn't have back then that I think I'm going to appreciate.
I was in high school, upper middle school or high school, lower high school, somewhere around there. I was not a Trekkie. I was not a sci-fi fan. Like, I'd seen the Star Wars movies. That's all I knew. And I knew a lot of people made fun of sci-fi stuff, whether it was Star Trek or Farscape or Babylon 5 or any of that stuff. And I just didn't watch it. And I didn't come to this until much later when I was an adult out of college. And that's why I missed it. And for the last 20 years or so, I've really kind of focused on other sci-fi things. I'm a big Stargate fan. I'm a big Star Trek fan. This has just been the one that's escaped me. So I'm excited to go through this now with this view and this lens, especially as a Star Trek podcaster where you examine things so much, of kind of bringing that sort of same examination, not comparing it to Star Trek all the time, but bringing that same sort of, I guess, skill base and critical eye to applying. So I'm really excited here for not Deep Space Nine. Sorry.
Like, you almost Babylon.
I'm going to make that's those mistakes, folks. Yeah.
Got to give a bzzz. Right.
It'll be the drinking game for the show. Every time we make a reference to Trek, you guys got to take a drink out there.
Yeah, we don't know what the drinks are yet for Babylon 5. I wonder if we're ever going to figure that out. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Are they in the fancy little weird space glasses and bottles that they have up there? I don't know.
The future ones, you know, they're from the future. But this episode is cool because it's got a neat story to it, you know, and that ties everything together. But I think the main thing it does, outside of introducing us to the station of Babylon 5 and whatever, but it walks us through and introduces us to all the characters.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I got to tell you, Jeff, when I was first watching the show, I had to watch this. I watched the first 30 minutes of this episode like four times because I couldn't figure out who everybody was. Like, I just, and this happens when you're introducing a new pilot and a new series to people, of like just trying to keep straight of who everybody is and what their history is, because they're all bringing in an established history at this point. So you're trying to figure that out and what that is. So Jeff, why don't we go through the characters and let's kind of just get a recap of who we think the main characters are now. So who do we got, Jeff? Who are the characters that we have?
I'll start at the top, right? So, and I think that I'm confused. So it's Jeffrey Sinclair, who is the, I'm going to guess here, he's commander of the station. He's an Earth representative, and he's the facilitator of the council. There's a council in which the five alien races, the federations of from across the universe, come and kind of like the major players make decisions. And it looks like he plays a lot of roles in the politics and the operation of the station.
Feels like that should be two different roles, two different people. Like, you know, so you're going to lead the station, administrate it. You're the ambassador for what's happening over there.
Well, I think, being an ambassador alone, that's huge. There's so much work. This episode does a really good job showing us the just like the space that we're working with. Like, this station is huge. It's massive. They've got like these trams you have to strap in for, like a roller coaster, to go from place to place. So he's got to run all that, keep all the crew.
And it seems like within the station, there's different environments.
Yeah.
Across the station. Like it, at one point I was like, is there like a forest in the station somewhere? Like, 'cause you're right. After watching this episode, I have zero idea of how this station is laid out. Yeah. Like, I've seen the outside exterior shot and I've seen interior shots, but I don't have any idea of how these things are pieced together. Like, I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, that garden, the forest thing, I don't know if anybody, this resonates, but it looks just like when you're on like the Presidium of the Citadel on Mass Effect. It just goes on, and it's really great. I don't know if it's a matte painting or what, but in the background, it goes on forever. And it looks like just this massive forest, you know, or woods thing going on. But they have a Japanese garden in there. And I don't know how you get there. There's some door or whatever. But I think like just the space we're dealing with here is massive, a massive scope. But Sinclair, right from the top, they establish this guy as somebody who's willing to get his hands dirty. There's this, I think, kind of awkward scene where a guy's trying to smuggle some drugs onto the station.
By the way, that was one of the scenes they added for the special feature. Was not in the original cut. Yeah.
Huh. So I have a lot of thoughts on that scene. I'm just going to share two of them though. One is like, they're trying to bust this guy. Dust apparently is the drug of choice in there. That's how it works, right? It's dust or spice, like in sci-fi.
Right.
It's one of the two. But like, when they finally whip the drugs out, it's so, it's like, It's nothing. And I'm just like, wow, they have taken the war on drugs to a whole new level in the 23rd century around here. Like they had snipers ready to take this guy down.
I was going to say, I liked the security guards when he was kind of going through the x-ray machine. They're like, yeah, okay, so he's got that on there. Okay, how are we going to do this? Well, let's not make a big deal out of it. We're going to get him on this, but you know, it's, I'm not a police officer, but I wonder if that's like, is that sometimes the conversation cops may have? Like if you have two people in a car, like at a traffic stop, like, all right, should we get that guy or not? Yeah, let's go get him. All right, let's be careful about how we do it.
Right. They're like, hey, let's pull in six other cars for this one. Like, let's make this a big deal or whatever. Right. It turns into a big deal though on the station. Like they want to play it low, and dude grabs a hostage and Sinclair just steps in. He's cool, right? He's calm. Mm-hmm. And he's like, look, dude, you're not going to win. And I think what was neat in that is, and I'm glad that they added this. I think it adds a lot. It just shows that this dude's involved in the operation of the facility, and he's super confident. Like he's really good at what he does.
Right. He's not on the guy's side. And that's very clear. Like, you're not going to win this, but he's like, hey, listen, you turn this over, you let it go. I'm going to let you go. And he gets the guy to let him go. And as soon as he does, the guards like latch onto him. And then like, he turns immediately into like, by the way, don't you ever come back here again, 'cause I will cut you.
Yeah. Seriously. We got your thing. We will blast you out of the sky. It's like, okay. Right. Whoa. So dude can be cool. He can take care of it, but he brooks zero BS. Like he's not going to deal with it at all. So he's backed up, right? So he's again, huge station, got a first officer, and you're going to have to forgive me, 'cause I'm only going to call her Commodore O this whole time.
And every time you do, that'll be reason for people to take a drink.
Yep. That's out of our butt right there. Yep.
There it is. Right. Right. Takashima, played by, I should have gotten her name. I don't have her name, but she does go on to play Commodore O in Star Trek Picard.
Well, I think what's fascinating too, is this is right really soon after Karate Kid 2. And I think a lot of people don't connect those dots. Commodore O was Lieutenant Commander Takashima, who was as a Kumiko in
Kumiko. Yeah. Kumiko.
She
was Daniel-san's love interest in Karate Kid 2.
Yeah. She was, and we see her again in Cobra Kai, which is great. But, me personally, not because of her Star Trek run, but because of the Karate Kid stuff and all the other great stuff that she's been involved in. I was just like, I am excited that we've got this actor on the show in there. But I think with her, like, clearly she is the boots on the ground dealing with like the ships, you know, ships coming in, the schedule, the crew being where they're supposed to be. She's day to day operations.
Yeah. And honestly, for her role, that's what you should be, right? Like you're the person who's actually in charge of running the station and the day-to-day stuff. So, and boy, she does it. And she's confident. When she's telling those guys later in the episode, like, get the recorder going before they blow us out, like, get it to me now. And I'm like, yeah. Tell them what's what. Like, you know, there's no timidity. With her in this at all. And I enjoy her character. I look forward to seeing her. And again, we're not trying to compare all the things, but her counterpart in Deep Space Nine would be Kira Nerys. And Kira Nerys is a grown, confident, strong lady. But Takashima doesn't seem to have the anger problems that Kira had and the baggage that Kira, which rightly so, I don't think Takashima, she doesn't come from however many years of occupation and that history either, but it's nice to not have somebody be just angry and pissed off all the time, but also still be fully confident and fully fleshed out and able to lead the station.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there.
Yeah. Well, I think too, because we get like this glimpse of her past in there, and it's really cool. I mean, I don't think, again, here we go. Everybody get a shot ready. But it's not Star Trek. And you and I, a big part of what we do is, like you said, we dive into Star Trek. We pull the lessons, the messages, the things that are in there. Right. And Babylon 5 will do some of that in there, but it's not really the point of it. But they tackle this really great thing that we encounter at work all the time. Takashima was assigned to a command out of the academy where she was treated like garbage, and it was basically a good old boys club, you know, and you basically bribed the captain, you know, to get a thing. She refused to play ball, and it was Sinclair that came in and changed things for her. But there's a point in this episode where she talks about, like, it's been a long time since I've broken the rules. And, you know, and I'm due, because she goes for it. But I think what's cool about her, and we see it just like you were talking about, like, she is a by the book person who takes her job super, super seriously. Mm-hmm. And and I think there's a scene, too, where she encounters one of the ambassadors who's all up in her stuff. And we'll talk about this ambassador here in a little bit, but not a friendly guy. And she doesn't, because this is what the rules say. Your ship's not following the rules. We're done. Like, that's it. There's no more conversation. She's great. And then rounding out, crew on Babylon 5, I think. Well, no, not round. We got a couple more here, actually.
Yeah, we got two more.
And
three, I think.
I want to say my favorite for last. So we'll get to the Doctor last. There's spoiler alert. I love that guy. Okay. But Garibaldi runs security. So talk about Garibaldi.
I will forever call him Gibraldi. I promise you I will. And not intentionally. Because that's the name that I want to say for whatever reason. You know, Mike Garofalo.
Oh yeah.
In sports, I always want to call him Mike Garofalo.
Totally.
Yep. You know what I mean? But it's Garofalo. Like that I feel is the same thing here with Gibraldi. Like, no, it's Gibraldi. Like that's how it should,
We have a pizza place down not far from us called Garibaldi's. And so, like, this is supernatural for me. It was supernatural. This is very natural for me.
There you go.
Yeah. It's supernaturally good pizza. It's that good.
Yeah. But I mean, Garibaldi, he was just sort of a guy, very competent, very able to do his job. I didn't feel like he had a lot of color to his character. And I'm sure we'll get more of him as the series goes on and that will change. But out of this first pilot episode, like, he was just sort of the guy doing the thing that the other people needed to have happen to move the plot forward. So I'm excited to see him going forward, but I didn't get a ton out of him. There's nothing that makes me like him, but I also don't dislike him either. He's just a guy to me right now.
So I liked him, and it was little things with him. Cause you're right. For the most part, like, he's errand boy. I'm going to go grab this ambassador who's, you know, out on the casino floor. I'm going to do this investigation thing. But I think, like, there was, like, little salt and pepper that he used throughout where he just made these little comments. Like, there was this little bit of foreshadowing where he and Sinclair are on a transport, and Sinclair's like, "You're doing a great job, man. I sure wouldn't want to be on the other side, you know, investigation for you." And he's like, "Yeah. Me either. I'll get you." And then at the end, when he's like, "Hey, you know, sorry about all that. Hope it doesn't cost me my Christmas bonus." Like, I feel like he's cop guy. He's security guy doing his job, being great. But I just like the little bits, like the salt and pepper of personality that he's had so far. There was a little bit, I don't know if you caught it, but the senator who I have some thoughts there. There's a senator who apparently calls all the shots or whatever, but he questions Sinclair choosing Garibaldi as his security guy. I don't know if you caught that. I did not catch that at all.
Yeah, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah, I think I caught it on the second time I watched it. His thing is just like, yep, he's been a short timer on every command. He's basically almost what you said. He's nothing special. And I don't think this was a good choice, but I don't know. I like the way they introduced him, mostly because the theme I think we're going to have as we're talking about all these members of the crew, just super competent. and what he does. And so then kind of to the side of the crew, because remember I told you I'm saving my favorite for last on the crew, right. Lita Alexander, who's a Psi-Corps person, a telepath. This was fascinating to me. And honestly, I have a lot more questions than anything after her involvement in this.
It's an interesting thing as a Star Trek person coming over to watch this lady, because we're so used to a person like Deanna Troi, but this was much more than what we're used to with Deanna, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like she's probing into somebody's mind. Now, granted, we do get the mind melds and stuff like that in Star Trek, but like this is like Jean Grey level, like telepath, but very controlled.
Yeah.
And very moralistic about the way that she uses it. And unlike, say, like a Queenie Goldstein from the Fantastic Beasts series, who doesn't seem to be able to control when she's hearing people's thoughts, like this person can really turn it off and turn it on. One thing I thought was really interesting, and I'm not sure if this is what they were implying or if this is something that I just put into it, but it seems like her abilities as a telepath are not natural, but learned.
You know, I don't know if I got that. There's definitely a learning thing, because there's the like Psi-Corps Academy or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm talking about. It felt like, oh, anybody could sign up to go do this. It just takes a really long time to learn how to do this, and it's really tough.
Well, and I wonder too, because there's a scene with one of the ambassadors. It's a great scene. It's awesome. I think it might be one of my favorite scenes, where this dude's like, hey, our race doesn't have telepaths. And that's a huge oversight. So here's the deal. I'm going to pay you a bunch of money for us to mate. And we can either do that by grabbing some of your DNA and we'll make a replicant, or we can mate traditionally. Would you like to be conscious or unconscious during the mating?
Well, I like how he sort of, yeah, we could just grab some of your DNA and we could do a clone. But because it's going to take a bunch of extra resources, it's not going to be worth as much. Yeah. But I'll pay you full price if we just go mating.
Yeah, we just go do this thing. But yeah, I wonder if that's a thing where like some races have the building blocks or whatever of a telepath, and humans are one, and they can just sign up for Psi-Corps or how that works. But I mean, they made it really clear. Like, there are a ton of rules and stuff in here. Like they did a really good job introducing her when she came on. And Sinclair is like, yep, you got to keep your log on this. Nothing of this, you know, like just really drawn boundaries around her.
I have a hope for something with her though.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's ever going to come to pass, but it really bothers me when you have a character in a show that completely goes against what they're supposed to do. Their moral ethics, as she does in this episode. And then it never gets mentioned again. They just get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they put up such a big thing of like, oh, you can't do this. You can't do this. This could get me kicked out. This could do whatever. And then she's going to go do this. Is there going to be some sort of recompense for that?
Yeah.
Because that's something we see in sci-fi as a whole all the time. Is people violate their stuff and then they get to retain their command, or they get to retain their position, and they get to, you know, like that doesn't work like that in the real world. Like this might have worked out, but you still did this and we're going to ping you for it.
And I think too, because like one of the things that makes Babylon 5 what it is it's truly serialized from day one. Like that was the whole point. And so the whole concept of like, you know, hey, I'm going to have an episode and do something, and then that's never going to get met. Like, I'm sure that's going to happen with some things, but it was huge, right? So the gist is, one of the things Sinclair says is like, you can't do you can't scan somebody without their consent, basically, you know, do a mental scan. And Kosh, who has the little headache patch put onto his hand, and it apparently kills him, or starts to kill him, is down, and she just reaches into his little Envire suit, and and really, honestly, like, it was not hard to convince her of that either. To the point, now that you say it. So, you know, we're jumping ahead. We're going to just kind of pepper in the plot in as we go here. Sure. There's this dude who has this, what do they call it? A changeling net. It's like this holographic device that can change how he looks how he looks or it looks. And so it comes in.
My thought of that is it's like the invisibility cloak from Harry Potter, only instead of making you invisible, it makes you look like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, right. Just throw this little cloak on and I'm going to look like whomever.
It's so much easier than like getting plastic.
We're going to flashy surgery. Thing you, and yeah. then we're going to look like whoever.
There you go. So he comes in looking like Lita Alexander at one point and goes to kill the Vorlon ambassador. And it was to a point where she turned so easily to just do this thing that I didn't think, like, I was just thinking, wow, she is really tough for this Psycor person taking people out left and right. But then it turns out it was, you know, Changeling Net person or whatever. But yeah, I have real questions about her ethics and her moral code and how strong like that conditioning out of Psycor really is.
At what point did you figure out what that guy was doing? I didn't figure that out until way later.
Yeah, I was going to say so it was like almost the end where like they did the reveal and I was like, oh, but when I watched it the second time, the minute, like there's a point where Del Varner, who's just random, you know, like civilian guy on the, they keep showing in weird ways.
Yep. John Fleck, the Suluban from Enterprise.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. Perfect.
And so obvious when you see it.
I know. Like,
I'm going to not be folks. I'm sorry. I'm going to not be able to call guest actors out that I know have been in. And it'll be, it won't just be Star Trek folks, because it'll also do it with Stargate and other genre stuff. But it's John Fleck.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to start recording Enterprise on my own show. So he's very much front of mind for me right now.
I love him too. Cause like, especially like one, just who he is, he can't be in anything and immediately arouses suspicion, right? Just the way he stands, the way he looks. And then they've got him in this awesome, like blazer thing. That's like, you know, it's a future blazer. Mm-hmm. You can tell cause it's like pastel, weird color check things. But there's a scene where he's in a room and you see the back of this Minbari. And we'll talk about the Minbari as we're talking about the ambassador in a bit, but walks in like, hey, it's been a while. And there's a gunshot. And like, when I watch it on the second time, I'm like, oh my God, they planted seeds for this all the way back. And I didn't even register for me like the first time around.
There was the first time I remember catching something was, I don't think it was with him, but it was with the next person. Like I saw like the little, like as the door shut, like the gunshot went off and the little flash thing happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's doing something, you know? And later I was like, oh, he's taking their, like, I didn't know what he was doing to him. I thought maybe he was taking their memories or he was like, I didn't know. And it was it. I figured it out before they said it, but it wasn't much sooner before they actually said it.
Yeah. Well, I think honestly, and this is given a little bit away in the end of this, but I think to me, that's a real testament to how well this episode was put together. When you watch it again, you're like, oh yeah, like it's there. All the pieces are there, but on a first, like you're just watching the episode, enjoying the episode.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I mean, that's going to be the great thing about having this as a first watch podcast for the both of us, because we don't, no. And you can only watch it for the first time once. Mm-hmm. Whenever you try to go back and rewatch, especially with somebody who's watching for the first time, but you know everything that's happening, you see it all that they don't. And you're trying to like point it out to them like later on. And they're like, yeah, I didn't get any of that. So it'll be interesting to see what we catch and what we don't. And the listeners out there will be like, oh my gosh, you're.
Yeah, right. I know there's probably something like, what are they talking about? But you're right. This is our only first time in here.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Right. Somebody's going to hear me saying that I didn't like Garibaldi. And they're going to be like, first of all, that's not how you say his name. And second of all, he's the greatest character in the whole show. And I'm like,
wow.
Okay.
I didn't know that. What do you? Yeah. In this one,
I got 109 more episodes.
Yeah.
Chill, dude.
He was security milk toast guy today, like little salt and pepper.
Be all right.
Yeah. So I think the last person on the crew we've got, my favorite, is Dr. Benjamin Kyle. Arguably, in my opinion, the most competent person in the whole episode. Just, I mean, like my real high level.
Why?
Yeah.
You've said, I've heard you say this several times. Why, what leads you down that path?
So Lita Alexander finds the little headache patch on Kosh's wrist and is like, oh, here's the poison. Mm-hmm. He finds the poison. And then immediately they're like, oh, there's an antidote. We don't have it. I got something close. I can make it work. I can figure this. Like he just has these little pieces of a puzzle. Like,
I'm changing the molecular structure of it so that it works. I'm like, somebody paid attention in chemistry.
Exactly. And then he's like, and I can have it all done in 7 hours. And Sinclair's like, well, didn't you say he only has 10 hours left? He's like, yeah, I got plenty of time. Like, what's the big deal? Like, I got this.
That's a 3-hour buffer window. Yeah,
well, seriously. He's experienced. He's been around the block. You know, I don't remember his rank. He's a doctor, you know, chief doctor on here. So he's got to be high up. But there's a scene with him and Takashima where he's like, I want to get that Psycor lady to like scan this dude. But it's unethical. It's borderline illegal. Mm-hmm. It's all this stuff. But like, if we're going to solve this problem, this is what we got to do. And he kind of figured out a way to like be like, this is wrong, but here's also how it's right and how we can do it in a kind of right way. And it's the thing that like literally saves Kosh.
Well, not just Kosh, but it also saves Sinclair, and it saves, you know,
everybody, really.
The peace. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that it saves the peace of the universe.
Well, there's that awesome scene at the end. Well, I say awesome because it's cool, but also wow on the CGI effects. But the Vorlon ships are coming. They're ready for war. And I mean, they got a whole like little mini armada out there, weapons hot, ready to blast the whole station. Yeah, Dr. Kyle did what it took, and he did it perfect. I mean, just nailed it.
That's an interesting take. It gives me a new appreciation to go back, I think, and watch him as we go forward. I kind of felt like him a bit like I felt about Garibaldi. Like,
yeah,
he's a doctor and he's doing what doctors do, you know, outside of quoting the Hippocratic Oath. But the one thing I did note, kind of talking about the Hippocratic Oath, is there is the part where Sinclair and I forget who else was around, but Dr. Kyle was there, and they're like, okay, you've got to go make this guy live, crack open a suit. And like, you can't do that because no one's allowed to do that. And he's like, yeah, but we have to do it or else bad stuff's going to happen. And he says, you're going to cut the feed. You're going to do this. Everybody else out of the room. You've got an oath to maintain confidentiality, and that's good enough.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really cool. Yeah. Like, and he'll do it. Like, he'll like when we got to the end of the episode and the girl was like, so really tell me, what'd you see? He said what he said about like, oh, darkness and things will never be the same. Almost like he was looking at a dementor almost. But what I really wanted him to say in that moment was doctor patient confidentiality.
Oh.
I can't tell you. Like, I wanted him to go back to that. And he didn't. And it's okay. They commit a sin of not meeting my expectation. So whatever, yeah. I'll forgive him for it. But yeah, I'm going to go back and watch him a little bit more and see, because you bring up some really good points about him. That could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see, especially with these humans, because humans are always in science fiction. Not always. They oftentimes tend to be rather bland,
mm-hmm,
as characters, and it's the aliens that are so colorful and boisterous and everything. And this show doesn't seem like it's necessarily going to go that route. So I'm interested to see, like, especially for a Garibaldi and a Dr. Kyle, like, do they get more of a personality as the show goes on?
Yeah,
because we saw some personality from Sinclair, we saw personality from Takashima, we saw some personality from Lita. I'm interested to see these two guys if they also, where that personality develops. So let's talk some aliens.
Yeah. Speaking of aliens, let's do it.
So trying to keep all these characters straight, because this is, well, I mean, it's not any more than what we normally deal with on our own shows. So it's, you just got to figure out which ones. That was the thing watching the show, is because I didn't know who to pay attention to. Like, they're talking to the senator. Well, do I need to know who he is? Should I pay attention to that? Or they're talking to, you know, all of a sudden he goes and he talks to this dude with really weird hair. Like, is he a guy that I need to talk to? Okay, he's getting a lot of screen time. Maybe I should pay attention to him.
It even starts with like a fake where Sinclair walks onto the floor and some guy's like trying to pick up an alien, and he's like, hey, you've never met one of these before. They eat you after they mate, right, and kind of a thing. So yeah, right. I mean, they,
oh, well, that was okay. That was such a great message. And I just want to, because you're talking about it right now, let's dive into it. As a Star Trek podcaster, as you mentioned, we often go in for the morals and the meanings. And in Star Trek, we're, you know, it's all very like the hope of humanity, and we've gotten past all of this. And he says this line, like, what are you, some sort of a bigot?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I didn't know we were going that way over here. And he's like, no, I'm not. They just eat you when they're done.
Yeah. I'm trying to save you, bro. Like, I'm throwing you a lifeline here.
I was like, I kind of got faked out, I think, on the way, like, of what Babylon 5 was going to be. Like, I got excited for a second. I was like, oh, but then that's really funny.
Yeah.
The way they went with that. Like, no, I'm not a bigot. Just, I don't want you to die, dude. Yeah,
like, I care. That's what I do.
We have these rules for a reason, and don't die. Alien Ambassador 1. We talk about Londo. Let's say he's a dude with the hair. I kept having this, you ever watching a show or a movie and like you see a character and you're like, I know that. I recognize this. Who is that? And it drives you crazy while you're watching it. I had that experience with Londo.
Really?
And it was his voice. That voice he's just kind of putting on as he's going out there. And it eventually hit me. He's the bug flying dude that owned Anakin Skywalker in the first episode one of Star Wars.
The little flying dude, right?
Yeah. What was it? It begins with a W, whatever his name was, but that's who the voice sounded like to me. You I was like, oh my gosh,
starship here. You got it.
Right. Oh, right.
That's exactly like Londo. Yeah.
Right. Right. It was that. And then he's Lando. Listen, just this is a Star Wars reference here. Maybe, maybe not. His whole thing was very interesting though. And this sort of what we gather, I think this is the history of the character. Apparently they're Centauri and they were big badasses at some point. And as a part of that, the Narn, who's one of the other ambassadors, were slaves to these guys. Apparently there's a big war. The Narn have since come out of slavery and the Centauri have dwindled. I think he said at some point we're only 12 planets.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, that's it. We're 12 planets and we're feeble. And he gets talked into basically selling his vote. And he's like, I'm just here to grovel, to make friends with these people. Like, these guys seem to have once been big deals and have now really been brought very, very, very low. I think that's what I got about him and his people.
Yeah. Cause I think, well, he had a monologue, or I don't know if it was a dialogue. Garibaldi was there with him, but so good. To me, it was one of the high points of the episode where he's telling that story. You know, we were everywhere. Mm-hmm. We were the most powerful thing. And he's like, now we've become a tourist attraction. Come and see the memorial of the Centauri from 9 to 5 Earth Standard Time. Like, just everything he said in the lines, it was just like, here's somebody who was on top and now it's just like, and it sounds like Londo experienced some of, like, you know, I mean, he's old enough that he was probably part of that heyday. And now it's just like, oh, now I'm the joke, you know, now I'm the history lesson.
It's as if you have an old Roman senator still hanging around way past Roman times. Right.
Let me tell you something, kid. Back in my day, things were great. And, well, actually, right. He even, like, that's the end of the episode. He's out and he's like, we did this and there was this big battle. He's talking to Garibaldi and Garibaldi's like, yeah, whatever, old man. Good for you. Yeah, that's right. Great.
Right. And it's interesting because the premise of this is representatives of the 5 federations of the universe are coming together to, I guess, sort of a United Nations type of situation to be the last best hope for peace for the universe. Not all of these guys seem to really be on board and like want to be there. Like, I haven't quite figured out exactly how that's going to work.
Because I feel like Londo would love to get an army back up and go out and recapture some of that lost glory. And he seems all for it. And then, you know, one of the other aliens actively is doing that.
Right. Well, so let's talk about that one. Jakar, who is a Narn, and I'll call him the lizard dude. And these are the guys that used to be the slaves to the Centauri. And he's like, we've overcome everybody and we're going to just roll through everything. We don't need anybody's help. But, and I'm like, why? So why are you here? Because it also seems like it's at least implied that he was part of the plot to falsely accuse Commander Sinclair of the murder or attempted murder of Ambassador Kosh, who we'll talk about him in just a second more. People do stuff and then they're not held to accountability. Like, if you do that, you don't get to stay. They're going to have to send somebody else now.
Well, it was pretty cool. I think that the way that they did all of that, right? They put these little breadcrumbs all the way through and you don't try. I mean, the second you see Jakar on screen, you're like, okay, there's the bad guy. Like, clearly, his makeup is incredible. I loved it. This is my favorite makeup. Just the gravitas of the actor. So good. Sure. But like, you guys just,
and this is the 90s where they're not throwing false herrings where they're going to make somebody look like that. And then they're going to be the good guy.
Yeah.
That's not the type of television show we're talking about right now. Yeah. Like,
he's the bad
guy. Made up like that. That's what he is.
Yeah. This is who you are. And he's a total skeez. Yeah. He was the guy trying to get Leta Alexander, you know, to mate with him and stuff. But, but when at the end of it, Sinclair and him have a reckoning and Sinclair's awesome. He's like, hey, yeah, let's have a toast to peace. Nice job. And by the way,
boss move.
I know. And then he's like, by the way, I come from, you know, the warrior group in my place. If anything ever happens to me, my warrior buddies are going to track that little nanoprobe you just swallowed in that drink and bad things are going to happen to you. Like, it's going to,
he goes, and you know what's going to happen? Why ruin the surprise? Yeah. I was like, yes.
This is awesome. But then it's even better because Garibaldi comes up and Garibaldi's like, wow. It's like, I mean, you know, is that tracker working? You got him? He's like, nope. I lied. There's no tracker there at all.
It's like, because if there was, they would find it and eliminate it, but there's not. So they're going to keep looking and they'll never find it.
Yeah. But I think that that's some of that accountability. And I'm hoping that like pops up in some way or somehow that like you are clearly a warmonger, dude, and you're not going to get away with it.
So how is he, again, that's where I go back to, but how is he an ambassador to this United Nations where this is the last best hope for peace? Like, I really hope they explore that idea because it's such a cool line. And I know that I've seen in the fandom that like, there's another podcast out there that I think is inactive at this point, but they call them like the last best podcast or something like that. You know, that seems to be such a carefully structured line that's going to be like a thing going forward. So I want to see how this is a part of that and how that comes to be. Let's talk about another one. There's five ambassadors. So just to be clear, Sinclair is the Earth ambassador. We've talked about Londo. We've talked about Jakar. Let's talk about Delon, the Minbari.
Yeah.
I'm saying it correctly.
Delen, the Minbari, I think.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Delen, the Minbari. That's the ashen white. Almost could have been Tilda Swinton playing that role.
Their makeup,
for all I knew.
Their makeup was weird.
Weird head thing going on, which again, I think they changed that for the series. Kind of like Odo's makeup changed. Like they'll change all that. But this was an interesting character that frankly, the big reveal at the end that the real assassin is a Minbari, I thought was her.
Oh,
like really? It wasn't until later that they're like, wait, she's back. Oh yeah. That was somebody else from my species. And I'm like, oh, okay. Cause I thought it was her.
Well, they look so similar. I think like, I mean, there's only two that we've seen, but both of them, like there's no gender defining characteristics. It's like, they're just Minbari. And like you said, it's total that Tilda Swinton kind of look, and it's powder, like almost like baby powder white, except for some scenes where there's almost no makeup or there's some inconsistencies there. But yeah, no, I think like it sounds like from what I can tell, like the Minbari are like they're the high, you know, race, like they're the ones who have been top forever.
They'd be like the Vulcans of this universe. Like they're the wizened old people who, you know, everybody just has to respect. You know.
Yeah, and they 10 years ago concluded a war with Earth. So which apparently we get a really great impassioned scene where Sinclair talks about his role in that, where he was at the line, which is a big battle that happened there and was knocked out. And 24 hours later, he came to and the war was over and right on the cusp of winning. And there's a lot of weird like innuendo. Right. Between Delenn and Sinclair, innuendo in the sense of like the Minbari, Delenn obviously knows something that Sinclair doesn't, you know, and the Earth people don't, like there's something there.
What we're told, they were winning the war, winning the world. They got to once. I mean, it was, I think the line they said was one more stroke of the sword and you were done.
Yeah.
And you decided to pull back and surrender or give up.
Yeah.
Why? And they're like, that's our business. Don't ask us. And then later when they kind of get pushed on that, Delenn says to him, like, he asked her, like, do you know? And her response was, I've told you what is best for you to know. Like, she didn't answer the question. So definitely there's something there. To kind of jump segments a little bit, that I think is what we're going to find out over the course of the series.
And I think that's like, The assassin just had that one line. What was it? There's a hole in your mind in there. And and that was kind of the thing that I think that got Delenn just like, she goes total like Enterprise Vulcan on that. Like, you know what you need to know. Stop asking questions. Right.
That's Oh yeah. That's just that's just an insult in our world.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
You know something here.
You know, I think one thing, and like Londo's got some pretty cool, interesting hair, makeup and whatever. Seems very comfortable in it. Like he's moving very naturally. It's good. Same with Jakar on there. Delenn's the one though. And I talked about the inconsistency, but there's just a weird, and I don't know, maybe it's part of being a Minbari. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there's just like a weirdness to her movements. I read as just being uncomfortable. Like the actor was uncomfortable in there. I don't know. I really want to like Delenn, but there's something about the makeup, the portrayal that I've just find really off putting. And maybe that's like you said, they changed some of the makeup coming up, and maybe that and takes care of that.
Maybe that's just part of the arc of the character.
Maybe
as we go through the show, you know, start here and we'll get.
I can hear people right now screaming at their phones and their radios, like, "No, this happens! Right. And you're right. So wrong!" Right. Just
right. And Jeff and I are like, I don't know.
Seems like the makeup's weird. I don't know what's.
All right. So the final ambassador then is actually kind of the MacGuffin of the whole show, Kosh, who's the Vorlon ambassador. This guy, he comes in, we're not allowed to see what he really looks like. They have a suit on, which to me was very reminiscent of the aliens from Independence Day.
Totally.
You know, it's so like cracking it open. And then it almost looked like a Doctor Who kind of alien. Like it was that, like it all sort of just mixed in a little bit to me. They go in, but he's the one, like, we didn't get a whole lot out of Kosh. Yeah. Like he appears, they drop him within like 30 seconds. They kept saying under a minute. It was more like 30 seconds. And then we see him at the very end. I hope he talks. Like, I hope he just doesn't have like this weird
buzzy
thing moving in his mouth. I hope we actually get a voice for him. I hate going back to the Star Trek thing, but when they cracked it open, I mean, he looked Medusan, which is, you know, for Zero from Star Trek Prodigy. And then that one off thing from a TOS episode a long time ago that almost nobody has seen.
Or remembers.
Like, it's such a deep cut. It's such a deep cut.
But it is. That's such a great point. Cause like, I think it's Takashima who says that the last human who saw a Vorlon turned to stone. It's the mid-90s. Are we still, we're seriously? Because I like the way that the Medusans do it in Star Trek, where like they fry your brain, kind of you can't comprehend kind of a thing.
So, but clearly, Dr. Kyle did not turn to stone, but he did say, you know, we referenced this earlier. He's like, things are bad for me. I'm not going to see things the same anymore, whatsoever. So, and I'd be interested to see how that affects him going forward.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. So there's Kosh. So we'll see. We'll see him. He's the guy who gets poisoned. So that's our characters. I think that's our main characters. There's going to be a couple others, I think, that come and go. But is that the DVD cover that we're talking about? Is this group of like seven or eight characters here?
It's a lot of people, right? But I also think that like it's a huge station. There's a lot happening. And we've seen in other sci-fi, you can make it work, you know, with a lot of people on there.
And it's nine people. And like, I wonder if the show's going forward, like we know that it's a serialized show. Mm-hmm. Every episode is like a chapter in a greater story. So it's not standalone episodic television. But what we usually see when you have a cast this size is certain episodes tend to focus on one character over another. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we'll get that going forward, where we actually dive into the characters and learn about them as we go forward. Or does it really stick to this just... it's about the plot and these are just the characters who happen to live in this world.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah. I mean, all we can do is guess. Right. But you know, I mean the way,
we can also watch.
Well, hey, let's do that. Find out. I think it's a good idea. Yeah, let's try that. But I think like knowing what TV was, you know, there in the mid 90s. And so, I think I'd read that JMS was pitching his show in the late 80s. Like this isn't a new idea for him. And
He was working on the show for about a decade before it ever came to fruition.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff. Well, let me ask you then, we've kind of walked through all of these pieces. Just what are your overall thoughts on this episode, kicking off this brand new series that we're going to dive into?
I kind of gave it away, you know, at the beginning. I think this was such a well crafted TV movie on stuff. Yeah. It told a story really well. I had to remind myself when it came out a couple of times, the pacing's pretty slow in some areas, but it came out in 93. This was what TV looked, you know, was. The effects in this are almost unforgivable. Like, oh my gosh, they're so not good, but it came out in 93. I'm going to give some credit. Like they went full CGI in 93. I think that was brave. Trek at this time was still using models for most of their stuff.
Well, do you know, were they actually full CGI or did this get upgraded to CGI when TNT ordered the special edition?
I don't know.
And maybe it was actually models. Cause I do know they redid the special effects when they did the special edition. So I don't know. Maybe somebody out there listening can let us know.
If they updated it to this, then the person who made that call should be fired. Like post retroactively. It's a bad call. Right. It doesn't look good. But like, if I were to sum this up, this episode, I would say JMS had his script. They said, go ahead, run, make the pilot. And they said, this is going to cost us $600,000 to make this thing. And they're like, cool, here's $50. Make it happen. Right. And he did. You know, I think this is that maturity thing I was talking about earlier, where if I watched this even like 5-10 years ago, I would have been turned off. The lighting wasn't super great. The effects weren't great. Mm-hmm. There's just the inconsistencies in makeup. There's this weird thing where like the people who aren't main characters, but our crew are basically wearing white button up shirts with this like five patch on them. It just, mm-hmm. it looks like they work at a, you know, Five Guys Burgers or something like that. I'm 100% sure. I'm very confident as we move into the rest of the series that they get funding or whatever. I feel that this did everything it needed to do. I feel like we have a pretty good handle on who these people are, on the galactic universe, you know, kind of that we're dealing mm-hmm. with. I really enjoyed this episode.
I am with you. Having come to the end of it, I really enjoyed this episode. But as I said, I honestly, on a very first watch, I struggled through so much of this episode.
Yeah.
I really did. I can understand where somebody of today's age, or even somebody who's maybe just 10 years younger than I am, looking back on this show the way that I look back on the original series of Star Trek, which just looks bad. It looks campy. The way they made TV back then is not the way that I'm used to TV being made, and I can't take it. Like, you know, as a Star Trek guy, I really don't enjoy watching TOS because it's so far out of my element. There's a handful of episodes I'm really good with. It doesn't mean I've not watched it. It doesn't mean I don't suffer through it. It doesn't mean I don't get into it, but it's not my thing. 90s Star Trek is kind of my thing. And this is 90s sci-fi. So there's a bit where I'm okay with a lot of this. But as you say, this show looks like it was made in 1993. It is a product of its time, for sure. I wish that there was a little more straightforward answers to as they're introducing certain characters.
Yeah.
Because it really was you got to pay attention to what they're saying to pick up on who's who and who's doing what. But once it got past the introductions of everybody and got into, I think it was really once they got to the trial scene mm-hmm. of Sinclair, where they're like, he's the one who did it. He's the one who's in trouble. And when they got to that, from there to the end of the episode, it was like they just kicked it into a whole nother gear. And that's when I bought into the show. And I went, I can watch the rest of the show now. Like, the first bit was really tough for me to get through. But once I got there, I was like, okay, I can do this. I'm excited to see where this show goes. Especially just given the hype that I know surrounds the show, the love that the show garners from people, like you can't negate that. You can't dismiss that when you're, what are we, 30 years after the show aired. We don't know anything about it, but you just know that the people that watch it love this show, absolutely love the show. So I'm excited to get involved with the show that I'm going to wind up loving.
I think that's it, right? This is going to be great. I'll put this there. If we watch this next episode and they're still wearing their white maitre d' shirts and like they still have Delenn and this makeup in one scene and that one, I might start sliding on this, but I'm making a strong assumption that they only had a couple bucks to work with on this thing. And yeah. And if that's the truth, oh my, they worked a miracle, total miracle mm-hmm. out of this thing.
I'm excited. I think I'll at least give it through the end of the first season.
Yeah, totally.
You know, because sometimes it can take a while to develop, but I know we talk about the Star Trek thing. I've referenced it several times already. The other thing that I podcast about is about Harry Potter and those sorts of things. And one thing I love about that universe is that was a story. The original story was a fully conceived story before she put pen to paper with book one. And you feel it. That is not anything we've ever had in Star Trek. George Lucas seems to intimate that was the thoughts that he had in Star Wars, but I don't think, honestly, that's the case, if he's being really super honest, either. To have a fully fleshed out story from episode one, I'm really excited to see what this is going to look
totally.
Like. And where this is going to go over the next bit. So that being said, Jeff, where do you think we're headed?
So I have so many questions. So I'm going to pose a couple questions that I have coming out of this one. Let me know if any of these are yours or whatever. But we didn't talk about this at all. And as we were talking through it, but this, I think, is one of my biggest questions. This is Babylon 5. There was a 1, 2, 3 and a 4 before it. 1, 2, and 3 mm-hmm. were all destroyed or sabotaged once they started going. So question one is, who sabotaged it? Like, who destroyed them? Yeah. But Babylon 4 just disappeared without a trace within a day of going live, and no one knows what happened to it. So that's my big, that's one arc I'm really looking forward to, is what happened to Babylon 4?
Do we get the idea that all of these stations were located in the same place and we just rebuilt on top of the same location? Or was this a series of stations in various parts around and this just happened to be the fifth one that was out there?
That's a good question.
Like, I don't know.
I think the way I kind of took it was, and like here I am writing the thing, there's an idea of Babylon, and Babylon is going to be where we pull everyone together, and you know, we seek peace together. And first one, second one, third one, nope, we're not going to have peace. We're blowing this bad boy up. And then something happens to the fourth one. Just, and maybe that's like a tension through this, is this just a ticking time bomb for Babylon 5, where something is going to happen to this one too?
The listeners out there are like, I know.
Like season 3, episode 4. Oh my gosh, you're so close.
Right. And then they're going to build a sixth one, but they're going to give it a special dispensation and just call it 5 or something weird. Like,
yeah, that. Defiant something or whatever.
I mean, you saying that there, all of a sudden the name comes to mind of thinking the idea of Babylon, like where you just said that the idea of Babylon, I went, oh, duh. Bringing together the various people who speak different languages, different cultures, different whatever, Tower of Babylon, bringing them, like whatever all that is, bringing people together to talk despite their differences and maybe and because of their differences and dealing with all the junk that comes with that, but still being able to work through it. Babylon. Okay, that's cool. I get it now.
Like, oh,
but yeah, what happened to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? Is that, here's the thing. Let me ask you this, Jeff. Would you be mad if the only explanation you got about what happened to 1, 2, 3, and 4 was what you've already been given?
Yeah.
And they never explored it. They just said, that's just what happened and we're moving
if on. If it's 1, 2, and 3 blew up, okay, fine. Like, I think that we're already seeing with Jakar and Londo that not everybody's bought into this idea of peace. So cool. Uh-huh. I understand somebody blowing up a station, but you don't drop a thing like, yeah, this one just disappeared without a trace. You don't drop that and not follow up on it. So the other big one that I have is, what's the deal with this Minbari surrender thing? Like, clearly when the Battle of the Line happened, a lot went down in a real short amount of time. My guess is like that, there's going to be other stuff, but I think that is going to be like the primary, at least for this season. Cause that's another thing too, that we know is each season is kind of a contained part of, it's like a book one, book two, you know, sort of a thing of a novel.
Is it? Okay, I didn't know.
So that. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to listeners. So season one is known as Signs and Portents. And then season two is known as something else. Like, they each are known as a thing. And so I think about it like when reading a book, you know, a big novel, you've got chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of book one, chapter blah, blah, blah,
right.
Book two. And so I think each of the seasons is like a book of the greater novel in there. And I think at a minimum in this first season, if not through more, this Minbari surrender thing is going to be like the major story point. I hope.
Right. Somebody out there's like, we don't get to that till season 3. I mean, those are two big, huge questions that deserve to be answered. Although I'm kind of guessing, I don't know that they're going to go back and dive into what happened to 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Like, I think they've already just told you, like, this is it. We're just not going to know. And that's not important because that's not the Babylon that we're on. This is something going forward. That's my guess. I'm glad to go back and explore what those are, especially if it really impacts the overall story.
Yeah.
And not just satisfying curiosity, but actually is like a part of the story going forward so that same thing doesn't happen to this Babylon station. I want to know why it's the last best hope. That's such an interesting phrase and an interesting tagline. I talked about it earlier. Like, it seems so well thought out and so well wordsmithed that why is it the last? This is their last chance. Yeah. Why is it the last? And the very beginning of the show, like the first words we heard, I think it was it Londo who was doing the voiceover?
Yeah.
He says, I was there at the beginning of the third age. And I'm like, okay, Tolkien. Chill out.
It's like, it's almost Battlestar Galactica. Like, it's the whole, like, the classic, the original one, like how it opens.
Yeah.
The beginning of the age of man, the 12 colonies.
I'm kind of interested to see where this is going to go. And like, I really have no clue what we're in for with this show. Like, I've heard that it's a lot about the political intrigue and that kind of stuff, but also it's going somewhere. And because typically you're going, okay, 22 episodes a season, 24. It's really hard to do 26 really good episodes a season. You know, you're about a third of your season's going to be like,
right?
Yeah, we could have passed that one through a few more times.
You're going to get a man of the people. You're going to get a Sub Rosa, you know, in there.
Right. Like, yeah. Right. I know the next episode picks up a year later, and that's where the story really begins. So this isn't really even the story. This is the prequel. I hope Sinclair grows on me more, because I agree with everything that we've said. Like, he's super confident. He's super competent. He's in it. And he still seems like a stranger to me right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you know, like I liked Sisko. I liked Jack O'Neill. I like my commanders. I don't think I like this guy just yet.
They talked about Garibaldi having some salt and pepper in there. And I think they tried to give a little salt and pepper to Sinclair, but he's pretty wooden through a lot of it. Like, there's a line where he's like, we don't know anything about the Vorlon. We don't know about their social hierarchy. Heck, we don't even know how far they go on the first date. And it's like, yeah, it's a funny line. I feel like you just read it off of a cue card.
It absolutely felt that way to me. And I'm like, that feels like a line that should have been like way later in the show. You know, like, we're not there with you yet, man. I'm not there with you yet.
Whoa, like, where's HR? Hey, hello.
Right. And like, I wonder, the people who've watched this before, they're like, yeah, we know what you're talking about. Trust me, it gets, but like, I hope there's people doing that right now. Like, just wait. You'll be fine. Like, I'm imagining that people are out there saying that.
Yeah.
So,
well, we got our next one. And I think you made a really great point. It happens a year from now. And so I think a lot of the, I don't know, just stuff, we're going to have a reintroduction in this next episode. And that one is called Midnight on the Firing Line. And Brent, we talked about this before. We're not reading the summaries or the synopses of these ahead of time. Cause we're trying to, like, we want to be,
I'm not reading the little blurb on Netflix or HBO Max. I think we're watching on HBO Max.
Yeah. Right, yeah. It's totally watching on the network. You know, hey, what's this next episode going to be? So I know what it's called, and that's what I got. Right.
I can't wait to get into it, Jeff. So with that,
thanks for joining us, everybody. Welcome to the ride. We like to think of this podcast as the blind leading the blind through Babylon 5. So thanks for joining us. Next time, we're going to be back, Jeff Aiken, Brent Allen, with Midnight on the Firing Line. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
This is my first time.